I wanted to start off just with a story about, I was telling Marie, because Marie doesn't follow the cricket like I follow the cricket. Are you aware that we even have a cricket team in this country?
No, sorry.
Doesn't matter. It's actually the English cricket team I want to talk about. They have, for a few years now, been a bit up and down with their test team. That's the five-day cricket, and not really doing very well. And then Brendan McCullum, who was the New Zealand captain a little while ago, he's taken over as the coach, and he's come in and he said, okay, I want you guys to play with freedom. I want you to just enjoy yourself, just focus on the simple things of the game, and I believe in you. Like, you've been selected, you're here for, we're going to give you a good long run, and I believe you guys have got the ability to do it. And they have, it's like they've had a personality transplant, and they changed overnight, and they thrashed New Zealand, even though we're the current world champions. They beat us 3-0, and they've just beaten India overnight with a record chase in the fourth innings. Some of those words might not mean much to you, but the record chase might do it. So that's just, and I remember young players when he was captain of New Zealand saying that they really loved how much he believed in them, and it gave them confidence and belief in themselves. And I mean, you're talking about a high level sport where they're supposed to have had experts who know how to motivate people, and clearly they didn't, because now they've got one.
Interesting. Strength-based practice. I wonder if he's working from a strength-based practice.
I think he's kind of learned by – that's what he was like as a player. Like, he had a lot of self-belief. And he was considered to be brash and have too much self-belief by a lot of New Zealanders when he started.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
How can we have too much self-belief?
Oh, well, that's the thing we worry about a lot in this country, though, isn't it?
Is when we are too positive about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Like, believe in yourself.
I mean, we all know about tall poppy syndrome, but like, I've internalized that, and we're very careful not to like overpromote myself to a fault.
Yes, I think we are all a bit like that. I mean,
I'm scared of overpromoting myself. Like, I don't.
It feels like you're doing something wrong.
I'm on the radio saying that.
But it does. It feels like you're doing something wrong when you talk about what you do well.
Yes.
Or what
yes.
you're passionate about, especially if you know far too much about it, and the other person is lost in it. You know,
well, you could lose them and bore them, perhaps.
Yeah, but that sense of knowing who you are is and being excited about what you're doing is something that's kind of lacking in work.
Yeah.
Maybe even play. I'm thinking of sports. I'm looking at you thinking, oh, should we go there?
Well, I can momentarily describe some of the changes that New Zealand football made to the way that soccer was coached in the country. And like, talking to the high-level coaches, they're like, it's coached really badly. It's always been coached really badly, because you get, and I'm like this too, like dads who become coaches who want to analyse the problems with their child's game or the team's game, and for especially younger kids, that just doesn't work. They need, and especially like, I've coached girls' teams, and the biggest problem in the past has been getting them to be confident and believe in themselves. And I'm not wired for doing that sort of thing, so I was able to cut out the constant criticism that kids used to experience as a coach. But anyway, the result was the numbers in soccer increased dramatically over the last 10 years in this country, and now all the sports are trying to do what they're doing.
So it
was about creating an environment where they enjoyed themselves first of all.
I think it's for every negative, we need five positives to wipe out the negative.
Oh, do we?
I think something like that.
Well, that's tough.
So we've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I know. That's a bit daunting, Marie. You're not supposed to make me feel daunted.
It's true, though. If we kept that in our mind, we might see the impact of negativity much more than we recognise it, because it takes a lot to negate or take away a negative comment. We're more likely to land on a negative comment than we are a positive one.
Yeah, we don't stew over a positive comment, do we?
No, it's wonderful, isn't it? I mean, not wonderful, I was going to say, yeah, but somebody said to you, you know, oh, it's just wonderful how, you know, you enjoy, I don't know, whatever, something, walking in the sunshine, I can see your happiness and it looks great, you make me feel good, and you'd be like, Well, how does that relate? You know, if they said to you, if they said to you, oh, you know, you're out walking, I can't be bothered walking, it's such a chore and I can't get out and do it and I can't motivate myself. You know, we kind of, you'd be like, oh, okay. You know, it's this negative. We go to the negative rather than the positive. We're not going to look at saying something positive to somebody. Mostly we say how it's affecting us.
Have we always been like this? I think so. Cool. Americans are not.
I just wanted to leave a bit of a silence because in reality, yeah, we have for a very, very long time.
But we've talked before about how Americans are not like this.
Well, you know, for me, this is just for me personally.
It's another English-speaking culture that's kind of similar to ours.
Yeah.
So it's obviously not that hard to be positive.
No, for me personally, Americans have a very louder way of talking, and they're more likely to be more positive about themselves and see themselves in a good light. I find that extremely refreshing to be around people who actually know who they are.
A lot of us find
and are confident in that, and not put off by other people not being where they are at and having to lower themselves to be at that level, which is often what we do.
A lot of people find it confronting, I think, to have so much positivity.
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
It triggers the internal tall poppy thing.
And it triggers in us. I mean, if we hear somebody being extremely positive, we would many times be thinking about the negative. Yeah, but what about this and what about that? And
yeah, I'm sure that's happening right now.
The stress that I'm under and so much and going on. And so we tend to go to the negative. But unfortunately, when we go to the negative, we're not releasing endorphins or oxytocin or any of the Dr. Feelgood chemicals that we need to help us feel alive and healthy and vibrant. What we're doing is we're causing more adrenaline and cortisol and stress to be released in our body. So it's hard to move out of negativity when, you know, it starts in our thinking. If our thinking is negative, our body is going to respond to that, and we're going to become kind of an example of our negativity.
And you have already talked about the term strength-based practice, and you've talked on the show about how, especially when you're dealing with young people, children, teenagers, that's the way you go.
Yeah.
So you don't go in and pick apart the things they've done wrong.
No,
which is probably what people think counselling is, which is not really what it is. But
no, it's not.
But certainly where the young ones are concerned, you definitely avoid that, that approach.
Do. Yeah, I work from a strength-based practice, which is looking at their strengths and not their weaknesses. I do this with adults as well. When we've grown up in a very negative environment or we haven't had much encouragement in life or our adults around us believing in us, you know, we can hold a very negative view about ourselves or always be looking for someone else to affirm us because we're so used to having our self-esteem affirmed by somebody else, not ourself.
Yeah.
But I need you to affirm me because that's what I expect in life. I don't feel I can affirm myself that would be totally wrong.
But that's a precarious place to be completely dependent on other people for your self-esteem.
Yeah, well, in the type of work that I do, which is person-centered, you know, we look at this internal and external locus of evaluation.
Yeah.
That's what we call it. So if this locus of evaluation is healthy, then we will look at the world in a healthy, we'll have a healthy world view.
Yeah.
No, regardless of the difficulties that come along, we will know that we can get through this. Even if we lose things around us, it's okay, we're going to get through this. If like most of us, our internal locus of evaluation is external, that means we look for validation from others to affirm us. We can't affirm ourselves because we don't believe that about ourselves.
Yeah.
So we need somebody to affirm that we've done a good job. So as long as somebody affirms you, you feel you've been good, but you don't feel that feeling within yourself. Yeah. You need someone else to validate it.
You become a victim to the whims and feelings of other people.
Well, this is what I deal with all the time,
yeah,
Aaron.
Right.
This is what I would deal with in most people all the time, is they are looking for validation from their partners, they're looking for validation from their bosses, they're looking for validation from their friendship groups, they look for validation from other people, because that tells us that we've done okay. That's an external way of looking at whether I'm okay in this world. And that comes from our earlier years and attachment. You know, if we've grown up in an environment where there's, you know, you haven't felt safe, or there hasn't been the nourishment that's needed for those first beginning years, we start to develop strategies to protect ourselves as children. So we may not go to certain, you know, individuals in our family. We might push away from them. We might cry. We might be too clingy, you know, because we know that person is going to reject us, so we become too clingy.
Yeah.
There's lots of huge work around these earlier years that affect us in our adult years.
I think that one of the things I always bring up at this moment, and I think because, like, I did quite well with grades at school, and there's this dawning realization somewhere in my adult life that there were people who didn't get good grades at school and got the message that they weren't very good.
Mm.
And we were just talking off the air about how the way we do the grades is, you get, here's your mark, and so here's the things that you got wrong, and we need to look at those things and sort those things out.
Yes.
And if that's, and teachers don't go into teaching to do this to kids, but there's almost a political pressure to have grading and things like that, because the teacher knows how well the child is doing. They don't need to sort of test. The teacher knows, but they have to do all this stuff. And just the thought as an adult looking back about what's that like to spend your whole childhood having that, like you talk about attachment, which happens earlier, but also at school, I guess it gets reinforced.
That's right.
It can get reinforced.
Happens. It becomes, as we grow, and if our locus of evaluation isn't healthy, we grow looking at the external world to validate us. And if we are moving into situations that are quite negative, and we already have a negative view of ourselves, then that's going to obviously increase that. We're going to we start to believe things about ourselves that aren't true. So you're not good enough. So you might have a core message in you that, you know, I'm simply not good enough, which was my core message. And a core message is something that goes in very young, and we start to live our life out of it. And they're not big, long sentences. Core messages can be as simple as, I don't fit, no one likes me, I'm not good enough.
So is your core message still there?
I've had to work on that one a heck of a lot. Oh, first I had to find it, Aaron.
You had to realize
so
it was
core
there.
Message is not something that plays over in your mind and you're hearing it. This is in the background. This is played out in your life.
Yeah.
It wouldn't matter how good you were at something. Your belief would be, I wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough. It'll never hit the mark, no matter how many times people tell you you're amazing. If that's your core message that you're living your life out of, then it wouldn't matter where you got in life. It just simply wouldn't be enough. Mm. You'd need to get to the next level.
Mm. So that took you a long time. What's a better way to do things?
Well, well, if I could, you know, just click my fingers and go, let's do family well. That would be great. Let's do childhood well. Let's do this family unit in a healthy way. Then we would have a lot more young adults feeling good about themselves, because, you know, the negativity wouldn't be sitting there. But unfortunately, that's not the case for many of us.
One of the things that I think has got worse in the last sort of couple of decades is just the stress on young parents.
Mm.
And I know I mean, my kids are pretty much grown up now, but I was a better parent when I wasn't stressed than when I was stressed.
Yeah.
Like, I was a bit more flexible, less grumpy.
Absolutely.
Less prone to flying off the handle at things that, looking back, you go, oh, that didn't really matter.
Exactly.
You know, all that kind of stuff. So we, as a society, we're putting our, especially young mums, I don't know what we're mixed up about that. Young mums are kind of, especially solo mums, are looked down upon, but they've got the hardest job.
I think some of the solo mums probably do a better job than the two parent families because they are playing both roles, and you don't have the aggression in the house. You haven't got the arguments in the house.
Well, you're saying women aren't aggressive?
No, I'm saying that when you're a one parent family, there's not a lot of people to argue with.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah, this is so true.
There's a lot less stresses going on.
I don't know if
the stresses look different.
Well, you've tried both, I guess. I've only tried one. I just would have thought it'd be even harder with one because there's no chance for a break.
Well, this is it. I mean, you don't get a chance for a break. You are a full time parent, 24/7. Like, yeah. You're on call. There is nobody going to pick up the thread for you. You have to do it. And you understand that as a solo parent. And yes, I have had both experiences. And with our last child, I got to experience having mum and dad, for this child, which was incredible because PJ is an incredible dad, This guy would get up in the middle of the night and take our son off in the car to calm him down without even blinking an eyelid, He was a very good dad. It's amazing. So that experience was incredible for me to have that support and in a really healthy way. Was amazing and the result is beautiful in our family. but it's not like that for everyone, obviously. But it was lovely to have that experience a healthy mum and dad situation for me, because I know what it's like to bring up a child on your own, as my husband does as well.
You both had that experience.
But going back to a strength-based practice, often the way we've been brought up is also the way we will parent. And so if our parenting, has been quite unfortunately aggressive or not healthy, then when we have our own children, those kind of ways of being start to rise up out of us as well.
I think everyone's surprised, like something happens and they're like,
what the heck?
That was my mother.
My
mother's voice just came out of my mouth. Yeah. And I realized, I sort of realized at one point, unless I had a plan for every moment, that's what was going to happen.
Exactly.
I had to really get my head around it. And of course, you can't have a plan for every moment.
No, you can't.
As a parent, that's impossible. But I wanted to. Let's just put it that way.
Well, and so did I. When I had my children, I realised within me was my mother rising up.
And actually, I should say more like my father, because my father was a school principal and he was in charge. So, and especially in case my mother's listening.
Just smooth that over.
It was dad.
Dad
was the disciplinarian in the household. So if I'm being the disciplinarian as a parent, then it's my dad's voice that's coming out. That is very much the case.
Yeah, and I noticed that with my children, and I made a conscious effort growing up that I didn't want to parent the same way as my parents. I didn't want to parent that way. Some of it I wanted to retain, some of the boundaries, and there was some really great stuff that they did in their parenting, but how to relate, how to communicate with your children, that's what I wanted to do differently. And I noticed when my children started to get into their 2- and 3-year-old states, that's when I found my mother rising out of me, because of course there's some pushback now and there's some discipline that needs to happen, and I didn't do it well my first time. I saw my mother rise out of me, and it wasn't how I wanted to do things.
Yeah.
So for me, I had to I'm a thinker, so I had to reevaluate. I recognized what I didn't want, and then I had to bring in what I did want, and then I had to be very conscious every time as my children triggered me in some way. I had to breathe. And how do I want to do this? How do I want to respond to this? How do I want to discipline my kids?
And you're learning on the job.
You are learning.
That's
on the
tough thing.
Because these little personalities in front of you, they're strong personalities.
And I was like, man, I should have sorted all this out beforehand, but of course you don't, because you just
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Because
you don't know what's going to happen with you.
Our experiences are attached to memories. And so a lot of those old memories in us and feelings aren't triggered until we have another little person in our life that's going to trigger that within us. And so if we never have children, that may never get rise to the top. We may never find that out about ourselves. You know, it's having our children that exposes within us those things that are traumatizing in our younger years, or maybe not traumatizing, but they are negative consequences to how we've been brought up.
I guess there's levels of trauma too.
There's levels of trauma.
Like you got ticked off for doing something to the cat you shouldn't have. That's a little one. But we've talked about much worse ones.
Yeah, and it's about disciplining as a parent from your adult self.
So disciplining yourself.
Yeah, well, no, even disciplining your children. Like, we can slip into our childlike state, Aaron, are triggered by certain things. We behave like kids. So we'll get into an argument and we'll start arguing like children, because that's what we're responding from, our adult. And to give you a good picture about this, a metaphor, so you're in a car. So really what you've done is you've let your younger self take the driving wheel, steering wheel, and you've sat in the back seat. Now you've got a little kid driving the car who's managing this whole thing, and you've taken the back seat and your hands are off.
Yeah.
You know, and we do that in arguments. It's like our younger self is the part of us that is still hurting and wants to be recognised and known starts fighting back. And you've got two adults that are fighting like kids.
Yeah.
And you can tell this after the argument when you walk, you know, when everything's calmed down, you say, why did I say that? Or why did I get, you know, why was I overwhelmed like that? So it's about recognizing what's happening in you.
And I want to do a shout out for the Parenting with Nonviolence courses that Te Maurito does. Mm. There's one going on at the moment, actually, it doesn't matter where it is because you can't join halfway through usually. But anyway, I've been to a couple of sessions, and invariably what happens is that the adult, because it's all parents there, we end up talking about our childhoods.
Mm, that's
like, because it's such an overlapping thing, like it you've is. Just described. Like there's you can't separate
you
the
can't.
Two things into. Yeah,
I see it like I've been thinking about this in our memories and how we respond to trauma. And I've been looking at it like a skipping stone, you know, when you skip a stone across a water,
yep,
and it
yep.
just touches the surface and then it skips on again and touches the surface before it kind of sinks in. I've been thinking about that in regards to past and present. And so when something happens in our present that affects our past, like we respond from old trauma, it's like a skipping stone. It's like these memories are brought back up in a rush, in a moment, and the feelings that are attached to them all come rushing to the surface as well.
I think we don't really notice them.
And we respond.
It's like we don't actually. I feel like it's mostly the feelings that come up.
Yes.
Because that's what takes hold.
Exactly. And, you know, you need to know that we do not need to respond to every thought that we've got or had, or every feeling that we have. We don't have to respond to it. We can allow that to pass through us and then take a breath and then reset and come back to whatever it is that's caused the issue. So we don't have to respond in that moment when we know that we're not responding well. We can move away from that and give ourselves time to get into our adult self, our wise place, I suppose, part of us that knows how to negotiate through this or how to communicate through this. However, even though I might see this as a counsellor, obviously in society we don't see this. So we see bad attitudes, we see people who close down, we see people who are negative, and we're not realising that actually these people have been triggered in their own right and from their own experiences. We have no idea what is going on in someone's life, why they are behaving the way that they are behaving. We have no idea unless we ask the questions.
And I think we have no plans for... Well, one of the things is, I think our culture, a lot of it is, if we want something to happen, we have to use force to make it happen. Mm. We go and shout at people. If we need to talk to the council, we abuse them. If we want kids to do stuff, we shout at them. If we want our staff to do stuff, we have to frighten them and threaten them. And we want our sports players to do well, we have to give them a bollocking at half time.
Or we might withdraw them from something as well. We can withdraw them.
Yeah.
Like, so, well, you know, we won't let you do that.
There's all these coercive measures. Mm. And one of the things I like about parenting with nonviolence is it's one place, and I know there are other places, where you're learning some different strategies as well.
That's what we need.
Yeah, because you can't, when you're in that moment with your 2-year-old and you're angry with them or they've done something, it's too late to come up with a new plan.
Yes.
that's what I found, tell you.
It's way too late because this is happening. So you're so right. Planning beforehand and knowing how you're going to respond to situations is so important. And we don't have enough information out there on how to respond differently. All we've got to land on is what we've been told and what's been taught into us from generations, and maybe a bit of information coming through around how we can do parenting in a still parent our children, you know, without having no boundaries around it. So, yeah, we're coming to, I think, new ways of learning, but we're not there yet. It's just starting to come out.
It's a slow evolution of everything.
Yeah, I may not even see it in my lifetime. Before there's this massive switch around to how we use our language and what it is we want to feed into people. I mean, if we're going to tell, if all we can do is see negative things, what's wrong with a person, okay, that's all we're ever going to see. I mean, if you see something that you like about them, it's not going to be enough because there's too much negativity that you see, that you are believing about that person. So strength-based practice. So if a child comes into me or is sent to me,
this is like
through
your,
the school.
Yeah, as a school counsellor.
When I was at the school. And you know, they've got a list of things that they, you know, may have been doing wrong, or in the class or our class or to a teacher or whatever, that's what they're coming to me with. So I can't work with a kid like that. So I work from a strength-based practice. I'm going to ask that child, you know, what do you like to do? That's where I'm going to start. I'm not going to start with all this.
So I hear that you annoyed the teacher and you did this and you hit that.
Well, that's why I'm not going to let them know you're
list.
In
here's
here. Your here's your list.
Yeah,
roll it out.
Misdemeanors. Yeah, you don't start with that.
Big rolling out of.
Well, what would happen if you did? They'd go defensive, I guess.
Oh, well, I'm not going to. There's nothing. There's going to be no relationship there.
Yeah.
And obviously, I might as well just stick another 10 rocks on this kid's back because, you know, make them even lower than they are. So, you know, we're talking about children who, you know, brains are still developing. The world is still an unknown place to them. Still exciting and new. So they've got lots to learn about the outside world and their inner world. So let's try and give them some sense of purpose in life in regards to being kind to them and being encouraging to them, looking for their strengths. What are they good at? What do they like to do? So a kid might come in and it might be as simple as they like to cook in the kitchen with their mother.
Yeah.
And I use that one a lot. And we might miss that. Oh, you know, it's not really a place for you to be. You should be out playing with the ball or something, you know. But actually, this is what this kid likes to do. So I would hone in on that. So tell me about that. What do you like to cook? What is it that, you know, what sort of foods? Are you into pastries? Are you into sweets? Is it, you know, dinners that you like to cook? And what's some of your recipes? Or, you know, and then as they start to tell me about what they like to do, then I will go even more encouraging into that.
Right.
And go even deeper until they start to recognize actually they're good at something and they love doing this and that's okay. And they become more focused on that than the negativity, than what they're not doing, okay, and all the things that they're doing so badly. But what you want to do is try and expand what they do well. Make that the bigger picture. And the other stuff will start to drop off as we see and as they start to see what they can do well and what they enjoy doing. Again, it's that release of endorphins, Dr. Feelgood chemicals, you know.
So do you ever return to the what's going wrong?
You know, at some point I might say, you know, so how do you think things are going in the classroom? How do you feel your relationship is with your teacher? I might come in from that way. I'm not going to say, hey, this is what has been said. Yeah. Tell me about that. You know, I might ask. I'll be curious about how relationships are with them. So I might go in the back door, basically. I'm not going to go in the front and boom, here I am. Yeah. I'm going to sort of like, tell me about that. I'm curious. How do you think it's going? And by that time, you know, people are at the place where they're willing to talk. Yeah, it's been hard, or I don't get on with such and such, or they said this to me, and you know, there'll be something sitting there why this child is feeling the way they're feeling or acting out of what they're acting out of. For some, it may be that they're, you know, we need to put strategies in place because, you know, their mind is a little bit fast and they need more support in regards to how to be calm and,
yeah,
you know. But what I've noticed in working with youth is that if you look at their strengths, they are more likely to head towards that, and the negativity will drop off. The things that have been, yeah, the things that they, well, they start to realise they don't like doing it. It doesn't feel as good, or they don't want to do that anymore. But we've got to give them a time to get to that place, and that's not going to happen in one session. Great if it did.
So I'm wondering why we wait till a child has gone off the deep end and then send them to you and then get strength-based practice. Why aren't we practicing strength-based practice throughout?
Oh, I agree. My question completely, why isn't strength-based practice should be in all things that we do.
Not a crisis, not a plaster.
No. This is about, yes, I know that you do some things wrong, but hey, what about what you do well? Let's look at that, because we know that if we are working in our passions, nothing else matters. If you're passionate about what you do, that becomes what you are focused on. Mm. And if that is exciting for you and you're getting motivated by it, oh my gosh, it's really healthy. That's really got some really good release of endorphins happening there, and our self-esteem is growing, and our belief in ourselves, that external can be rebuilt to be an internal locus of evaluation. We can adjust that in time if we realise actually what we're doing. We're looking to others to validate us. When we start to realise we're living our life out of that, then we can start to switch it. Actually, I need to believe in myself, actually.
So when we're talking to Marie, who's a local counsellor therapist. When we started this interview, you were talking about how the adults coming to you, a lot of it is about this external versus internal locus of evaluation. Mm. In fact, you were acting like that was all you get, is people struggling with that.
Well, that's a big one. Yeah. It's massive. I mean, even with the other issues that might be sitting on top of that, layer upon layer, Aaron, we will, as the layers get worked through, you're going to come to this place where it's the core. So, and this very much is our belief about ourselves.
So we, Karen and I, when we just had the kids, when Adie was first born, we must have read something about that, like, external validation idea, and this is just one aspect of being a parent. But when a child has done something good, the idea was not to say "well done," like we were the authority. Oh, we have judged you and you have done well, right? It's not to come at that from that. To be positive in a different way. And that was actually a struggle to start with, to work out how you would do that, because I haven't seen it done any other way. But basically, you can be excited about what they've done.
Yes.
That's an awesome picture. I really like this. But not the good job or the well done's.
Thank you for your help. Thank you for your support. Or I really, it was fun doing this with you.
Yeah. I think getting alongside and enjoying what they've done is kind of more genuine. You've got to find it. It was really hard to find it sometimes.
Yeah, it is, because it's a learning process with a kid. Like, if you say, hey, you've got 10 minutes to clean up all your toys before we're going to go and brush our teeth, and you say you've given them 10 minutes and they understand the clock and what, you know, and they've gone, now it's 15 minutes, like, oh, now I've got to deal with this. do I have to? It's like, yes, I do. And but how are we going to deal with this? So, this is about time management. This is about learning to do something within a time frame. Not that I need you to do it in 10 minutes. Otherwise, pa-boom, something terrible is going to happen. But more so, I'm trying to teach you about how to be on time.
Yeah.
You know, to do this, because as we grow older, this is gonna have an impact on us. How many adults turn up 5 minutes late, 10 minutes late to something? They're always late, you know.
Well, we're in Raglan, so that's like everybody.
But we say that. But I learnt this a long time ago, actually, to turn up on time. In fact, turn up 5 minutes earlier. My mum used to always set our clocks 10 minutes fast.
Oh, no.
She did, so that we would always be on time. But I learned that growing up. But so I'd be always thinking, okay, so if I want to be on time, I would be thinking of time like that. I probably need to leave 10 minutes earlier so I can get there on time.
Oh, so it worked for you. I feel like sometimes that backfires. Like, it's just better to be...
Yes.
To be honest with the child and
I agree.
We need to leave now to be ready for this rather than like trick them into being ready on time.
Because
then when they go out into the real world where the clocks are actually on time.
Exactly. Which is what happened to me. Is that what our clocks, to you? So I'm a very much, I kind of guess the time a lot of the time. I don't wear a watch.
Well, you always get here. You get here early usually.
Exactly. So, that's kind of something that's been installed in me. Which I'm happy with. I'm fine, but there was a time probably where I was a bit lax in that, and would turn up 10 minutes late.
Well, and then you get experiences that motivate you, I guess.
Exactly, but you know, working on a strength-based practice, you can do this in relationships. You can do this in your work situation. You know, incredible in a work situation when you've got a boss who is encouraging and can see your strengths. And isn't put off by your weaknesses.
But most employers don't get employer training. We just become an employer. Well, I say, I'm not really an employer. I only have volunteers.
Yeah, it takes a certain type to be an employer, though. Like, you've got to be you've got to see some sense of leadership in people to be an employer. You've got to see things in people. You don't just rise to that place for no reason. There's a quality within you.
But so many people do. They're like, I want to, like, some people be like, I want to run a business in Raglan in the main street. So, and then you hire staff, so suddenly you're an employer. Mm. Or you become a tradie, and then you're getting lots of work, so you need staff, so suddenly you become an employer.
Yeah. I'm just going to pause there, because yes, that may be what happens, but does that end up being a long term thing, or does it, you know, are they really built for this? Or does it fade out within a year? Or 6 months, because it was more about a desire to want to own a business than actually this is who I am, this is what I'm good at.
Maybe we don't think about running a business, owning a business, or being an employer in that way. We think about the business as that's how I'm going to make my money, or I like doing that thing.
Mm.
But a huge part of it is the people side of it. And
yes.
My experience of being employed was that in my life, most of the employers didn't know how to do the things you're talking about, but they did know how to shout at us. And that's the building industry. I've talked about this a lot because it's still with me, is run on people just abusing each other, especially out in the trades. I mean, I know places where it isn't now, but 15, 20 years ago when I was heavily involved, it was just how it was done. It was,
I've actually worked under a boss when I was at Parentline.
So this is a counselling
when situation. I was working with kids, young kids there. She was amazing. I really enjoyed her as a boss. She probably, for me, I felt like she was a strength-based employer. She saw the strengths within me and was, I mean, I just had kind of, I could work how I wanted to work. She trusted me and I valued that trust, and so I was at work half an hour early and I would leave half an hour late. I'd do more than other people. Sometimes I'd work through some of my breaks because the value of my boss, you know, I valued her and I wanted the organisation to look good and I wanted it to produce really good outcomes. So, my heart was invested in it and even though it wasn't my passion, the respect I had for her it was great because she was able to see my strengths and I and rise me up in regards to how she brought me in on her work as well. Like there was mutual understanding there.
So do you feel like there was a relationship?
Yeah, like that's because she built it. Yeah. I mean that's she was my employer. Well, she wasn't my employer. There was a boss above her. She was our manager, but she was part of the work that I did. So, yeah, if you've got that kind of relationship, and it's really important how your boss is towards you. If all they see is the negativity, then you can guarantee that's the work you're going to get from them. It's going to be dragged out work. It's not going to be dragging their heels.
So if you assume your staff are always going to be a problem and they're going to be trying to skive off and get away with things.
Yeah, you can always see them like that.
But will you induce that as well? Because it sounds like your manager there induced a positive worker basically out of you.
Yeah, well she did, and that was a good experience for me, and I really wanted to learn the whole idea around organisations and how their systems worked, and she probably knew I wasn't going to be there for a long time. You know, she knew I was only going to stay probably 18 months because she was always saying, well, you know, trying to keep me to stay and keep working there, but yeah, obviously I had other things I wanted to do.
I tell you what, that's something that does create better employers is if, because we've always had reasonably high unemployment for a long time now, and just lately employers have been having to try to attract staff, and they probably resent having to do that, or it's a frustration having to do it because it used to be easy to get staff, but they are going to probably create some positive experiences for people that might not have happened previously.
Because
it could be quite a good thing.
I agree. Maybe this is the shift that we've needed, because you're right. In employment, we've always gone and going, oh, please employ me. Like, you know, I'm
on
amazing.
Our knees.
You know, you have to kind of like, I'm amazing at this. And, you know, even if you don't believe that about yourself, you've got to go and kind of like, oh, it's not a nice feeling.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's lovely if your employer, you know, employer, in front of you is looking at you in a positive way, like we want you on board. You know, it's far different place to be in than somebody who's looking at you like judging, trying to find what is it I don't like about this.
People should listen to my interviews with Natalie Sims, who's a local careers advisor. I talked to her sort of once every 4 weeks, and it's been really, it still is mind bending for me, because we talk about, like you talk about strength-based practices, she kind of does the same thing with people like, what do you do, what things are you good at?
Mm.
And they might say, oh, I go hunting and like, and I do this, and but that's not employable. And she's, no, there's stuff in there.
Yes.
There's skills that can form a basis for your work skills.
Absolutely,
like
that's just wonderful.
That was like one hobby that someone might have off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of similar in what you're saying, but just this mind-bending thing of trying to find a workplace that suits you and suits your personality and your interests. And so you're not at that thing of like, please give me a job. And the boss is like, oh, here's another one, but I need staff. You know, but it's actually like a relationship where it's like, I'm really passionate about this. And they're like, this is awesome. This person's going to, you know, I can enjoy employing this person. And
wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, it's still a real mind bender for me, because that wasn't my experience when I was younger.
No, and most of our experiences, it was very much a hierarchical situation. The boss was very much well over you, and don't question and just do. It's like a horrible 9-to-5 job, you know.
I see
where there's a dark cloud hanging over you.
I see you've had them as well.
Oh, definitely. Well, you can't wait to get out of there. Like, that's the last place you want to be. It's a horrible way to live. That's not going to produce anything positive in us. But I tell you what, you can have a really dull working situation, right? Like in a factory, like, and just doing a tedious job. But if you've got an amazing boss and people around you that are positive and aren't, you know, heading down the spiral, it changes everything. It really does. If your boss says to you, man, you did really, you know, you upped our level today. You did, you know, 100 more than we expected. Or, you know, your work is great. You know, I really appreciate how you are working. you know, I value you. It's amazing.
Can that? I'm just thinking. That, I know we're running out of time. There might be some employers listening, going, "Yeah, but sometimes I get these people, and they are really difficult." And
yeah, well, then you shouldn't have probably employed them. I mean, you've got to take some responsibility here as an employer.
But you might just need people. They might be thinking, "I really need to send some of my staff to Marie."
Yeah, well, if you're working from a strength based practice, the ones who are dragging the train won't survive in that environment anyway. So they too will, because there's some people who don't want to work, you know, and they are going to drag the chain and they are going to make it difficult for everyone else. But if you are working from a place of positivity, then those ones will drop off, because they just won't. They'll either lift up and start to believe in themselves, or they'll be like, yeah, no, I'm out of here.
This place is weird.
Yeah, you guys are strange. Way too nice.
Yeah, I can see that. That definitely will happen with some people.
Absolutely. Yeah. So maybe take that one on today, if anything.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we've been talking to Marie Harworth, local counsellor therapist. We do this every fortnight. And that was interesting. We didn't know what we were doing to start with. But
as usual.
Don't say as usual out loud. Sorry, I'm supposed to say that off the air. But that was really good, because there are always things happening out there, and it's...
Yeah, just think strength-based practice, have a look at it, see how you may be able to come alongside that and change someone else's life by putting in some positivity when all there's been is negativity.
Yeah, yeah, and that can be, and there's so many things in it. We're always talking at the moment about how everyone's stressed and arguing and the whole mandate thing of separated people, but and maybe this is a way back in. To relationships.
It would be a breath of fresh air for a lot of people, I think. Yeah.
All right, Marie, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, end of the show for the day. I will be back again tomorrow morning. That'll be Thursday.